So, Ms. McCann, what's before us?
We're on item 18, annual offsite meeting agenda items, and we have two reports that we gave you and discussions that Roger's going to lead, and the first is about our water quality accomplishments, and the other is priorities, performance measurement, and results.
So one of the things I'd like to avoid if possible, but it's hard. It's harder in this setting where instead of being able to sit around a table casually, we're still in this formal set up here, which is one of the disadvantages of not breaking to a, you know, our usual true offsite location. Like,
yeah, but you keep moving. That's you're like a moving target.
Yes, and now all you can see is my head right here, right?
I just hear your voice. That's all.
Yeah. So I mean, that's unfortunate, and I encourage you to chime in and contribute or ask questions or give us your thoughts instead of just me being a talking head. And Michael's got a few things to say as well. We don't have as many staff here as we would have if we were having our offsite meeting in San Luis Obispo for obvious reasons, but we have some other folks here who might. It might be appropriate for them to chime in when we're talking about their individual areas. But anyway, I actually want to start with talking about our goals and priorities. And since priorities is getting to be a kind of an overused word, I said, what's most important? And that's a important question, more important question these days, because of the fact that we have had budget reductions. We're down an effective about 20% from where we were just like 3 years ago. That takes into account the attrition that we've had as well as the furloughs that we currently have. So that's why I say it's an effective reduction of about 20%. But that still means that we have a large group of very talented and professional folks, and but we need to figure out what is the most important thing to work on. There's no shortage of things to pull us in different directions, and unless we really focus on what those important things are, it's easy to get spread thin and do a lot of things poorly instead of doing the most important things better. So, as you recall, we have a vision of healthy watersheds, and then we have goals that go along with that. So what I did is I hired a graphics artist contractor to give us a very expensive cross. This is a geologic cross section of a watershed here. And this is where's my cursor? This is the ground surface.
Looks like an engineering drawing to me.
And this is a creek, and this is groundwater. We paid millions of dollars for this. graphics. So our goals, and I wanted to keep it pretty simple here so that you hopefully can get in your minds the very simple concepts that we have of what goes into having healthy watersheds. So there's the habitat part, healthy aquatic habitat that's in the streams. There's the groundwater part, clean groundwater. And then there's what runs off and affects that habitat. There's what percolates and affects the groundwater. And so that's the part where we talk about land management. So that's our little triangle or a circle that defines our goals. And, of course, we have more words to describe this, and those are, and I still have these simplified, but some more specifics are that by 2025, 80% of the groundwater would be clean, 80% of the aquatic habitat would be healthy, and that 80% of the lands would be managed and maintained for proper watershed functions. And then additionally, we say that the remaining 20% would be on a path that's a positive trend. So those are our three goals that we figure if we could attain those goals, we would have pretty healthy watersheds. But those are not priorities, because each one of those is important. I've heard a commercial on the radio recently, a very dramatic voice saying, if you had to choose, would you choose clean air or clean water? Well, the point is we shouldn't have to choose. We shouldn't have to make those kind of choices. They're all important. But since they're all important, that doesn't really help us when we're having to deal with priority setting and answering that question of what is the most important. So we have had to make some decisions to try to break that down in more bite-sized pieces that make sense from a priority basis. So in our report here, the first part of this report, we've listed these, and these are in priority order. And one of the things I pointed out is that unlike some of the resources agency, like Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Game, those are agencies that are geared towards the critters, right? They're not about public health. So they would not have a list like this. They're not a multi-authoritative agency that deals with different aspects of watersheds like we do. So they would certainly not agree with this approach. California Department of Public Health, of course, health is their primary thing. So we've had to make these choices, or we think it's appropriate to make these choices, and we have made the value judgment that human health should be first and foremost and does trump aquatic habitat, toxicity, and those kinds of problems. Like I say, not everybody would necessarily agree with that because they might say we can't be healthy if our creeks and our aquatic habitat is dying all around us, which is probably true. But nevertheless, we've made this choice. And then we've talked about hydrologic processes. So that's, again, land management, how runoff affects our creeks, how runoff affects the lack of recharge, which is bad news for groundwater. And that can in turn lead to seawater intrusion through overdraft or through lack of recharge. That water imbalance can also cause groundwater salt to build up along with those other land uses that happen on the land. But nevertheless, in the first part of this report, this is the cut that we've made in terms of trying to say what's most important and in what order. Now, there are challenges to having these priorities. And did you want to talk about this part, Michael? Okay. Yeah.
So Roger mentioned these priorities that we've identified. And under each one of these, like under human health, we're working on identifying the actions that we need to take to address the most important human health risks. And one of those, for example, we talked about it quite a bit today, is nitrate. And we seem to talk about that at every board meeting, which is a good thing, because that is the greatest threat to human health that we have in our region right now. So underneath that, in that category, we're listing all these action items, and we're defining what those actions are and putting a schedule on them. So here's the thing we need to do, and here's when we want to have it done. And we're also asking ourselves how are we going to measure it, how are we going to measure progress on that item so that we can let the board know how we're doing and let the public know and let ourselves know. And the tracking of these action items, I think, is really important because in tracking them, it makes it a priority for us, and it helps us to stay on track and stay focused on those issues. And as you can go to the next one, Roger. And one of the challenges that we have is staying on track. And once we identify these actions we're going to take, you know, our highest priorities and the actions we're going to take on those priorities, life happens. We're trying to stay focused on those things, and we get a call from Jeff Young, the chair of the board, and says, what about this issue? I'm going to pick on Jeff here. I was driving to a board meeting and was looking out the window, and I saw this problem on the way. A construction site, and there seemed to be erosion there. That actually happened one time, Jeff. You came to a meeting, and so we then have to take that information and say, where does that fit in our priorities? And if we're going to work on that, what are we going to stop working on? So that we're constantly weighing these things, information that comes in. Something from the state board. We get contacted by the State Board all the time, where the State Board has its priorities, and they're taking action on their priorities, the State Board and State Board staff. And there are times when our priorities do not line up. So if we're going to respond to a direction from the State Board or State Board staff, then we have to ask ourselves, what are we going to stop working on? Which one of our priorities? So it's a constant balancing act. And we think we can do a better job of staying on track if we define our priorities better and we define our actions better and track those. And there are times when we know we're going to push back and say, when we get direction or influence or suggestion either from the board or board members or the State Board or outside interests to move on to something else, we're going to be better able to say, here's why we're working on what we're working on, and if you want us to work on this other thing, here's what we'll have to give up, and here's what we'll have to stop working on. So we want to get really good at that, so to inform you and to inform the public and to inform other interested parties what we're doing and why we're doing it and the balancing that has to take place there. So staying on track is a really big challenge, especially in an agency like ours, which deals with so many different things. And dealing with different things, we have to adjust as we go, and we realize that. Now, one of the things that's happening right now, I mentioned us and the State Board. The State Board has its priorities and is constantly working on its priorities and communicating those out to us and what they measure, you know, to determine whether they're effective and whether we're effective. So one of the priorities right now is actually measuring things to determine whether we're making progress or not. I remember several years ago when Board Member Hodgin was appointed, and we had a session where we were, we first met with you and we're talking to you about all of the things that we work on and what was most important. You had this question at the end of the session. You said, how do I know that you're making progress on these things that you say are important? That's what happened. Silence. I really thought about that question, and it's stuck in my head ever since. And I think that we are getting a lot better at that, at being able to answer that question, but we're continuing to work on it. You know, we're raising that question for ourselves internally and continuing to work on it. So like the State Board, for instance, is State Board staff are working on measures to determine whether we're effective, and some of those are administrative type measures, like how many permits are we issuing, what percentage of permits are we reissuing on time, and things like that. And they're getting pushback from the regional boards because the regional boards are saying it's not about permits. It's about water quality improvement and how are we going to measure water quality improvement. So we're constantly struggling and dealing with this issue, but what we're learning as we go here is that both views are valid and both are important. And we're trying to come up with a comprehensive, sophisticated way of measuring our progress that includes both perspectives, both the State Board perspective and ours. So one of the things that Roger and I were talking about is what are our roles in this? And what question we're asking is, what is the Water Board's role in this? What's your role in helping us define our priorities and helping us to stay on track? Because the board can help us to stay on track, or the board can strongly influence us to get off track because you give us direction. Sometimes that direction can come in the form of clear direction, go do this. Sometimes it can be questions about things where, why aren't we doing this? And then we can interpret that as, gee, I guess we should be doing that. And then we think about, well, what are we going to stop doing if we go do that? So what we want to do is better define your role and our role and how we can help each other stay on track. So we'll be bringing this up to you more as we go along. If you have ideas about that, we'd like to hear them now or as we move forward. It's especially going to be true as we get new board members. New board members come onto the board with a different perspective and haven't been part of the process that got us to where we are now, and maybe even a priority-setting process. So it's important when new board members come on that we think about that and how we're going to stay focused on our priorities and how we're going to revisit those and adjust them over time.
I would think if we raised a question about something that you should be able to tell us, well, we're working on it. It's part of our priority list. It's not high. Here's where it fits in. And we'll be getting to that in a certain period of time. I think that's all that we're asking for most of the time is, are we addressing it? Things that are not on our radar, then you would just have to tell us that, you know, unless this gets elevated in the priority list, it's something we're probably not going to get to in the next 6 months or a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you think we're doing things that are going to have a cause and effect on your time, you need to let us know that.
But on the other hand, Mr. Chair, if one board member speaks out, is that an indication that all the board is in support of that, or and that is direction to the staff? Or are you asking, is this what the majority of the board wants to happen? And then that is clear direction. My past experience is that you may have one board member that is looking one way, another board member is looking another way. Unless you, as the chair, get clear direction from your colleagues to give that direction to the staff, we're giving them mixed signals. And I think what they're looking for is clear direction. And so consequently, you can't just take, for instance, if I come out and say, I want this done, and nobody else says, well, I agree with you, and you don't have a majority, well, then that's not the direction of the board. That's only my personal expression. So I think you as chair should say to your colleagues, if that is an issue, that if this is the direction, you get nods from the majority of your colleagues, yeah, then you give the signal to the staff, this is the direction we want to go. Otherwise, they can be going, all the staff out here could be seeing every board member saying something different, and when they get together to trying to find out where they're going to go, they're saying, well, I took it from Russ that he wanted to go this way, and Dave wanted to go that way, and so what we need to do is give very precise, very direct direction if that's what we want to do. And I think that's only fair to the staff. Is that what you're asking for, Michael?
It's part of it. I think that we need to have a more informed dialogue about what our priorities are so that when issues come up and we're talking about taking on something or going in a different direction, we have the conversation about it in this context of what our priorities are and that it's a balancing act. And if you really want us to go in a different direction or take something else on, then we're going to have to adjust.
We'll have to stop doing
something else.
Absolutely. And you know, we may set up the priorities today, but 6 months from now, there may be an issue that comes up. Maybe it comes down with a state law change, or maybe there's an issue that we didn't know about. But I think that's the time that the staff or the board says, or the staff should bring it to the board and say, look, this is an issue. It should be addressed. Does the board want to change that direction and put this as a higher priority in something else? Because you folks can only do so much. You only have so much time. I realize that. And I think all of us have, you know, ideas and priorities, but again, we're a group, we're a team. So we have to be able to give directions, Mr. Chair, and I think that's important.
Well, that was part of
able to move.
That was part of the reason for putting in here adjusting, like you're talking about, things change. It could be a law, it could be that we get new data.
Absolutely.
And we realize the problem is more serious than we previously understood, and that certainly happened plenty of times. But we have to be careful about this is a problem that somebody's brought to the podium today, and boy, it seems really serious. We have to be careful about really locking in on that and not comparing it, you know, in a meaningful way to what the other priorities are. And it's hard to do in the moment.
Well, I think we're all guilty of that, Roger, because You know, we're here actually, well, we're all here representing the public, and we're all representing the people of the state of California. We're all looking at the same issue of water quality, and, of course, people that come to the podium have an issue that's very dear to their heart, and they want to express that. And they want some response back to us because they feel, and rightfully so, the governor appoints us here to be able to hear from the public and decipher what they're trying to tell us to make this a better agency or a better state or better water quality.
Right.
But I think we have to be able to take some of those issues and explore them at least, and not just set them aside and say, well, it's only a one-issue thing, because it may be a bigger issue than we realize. But again, that has to be a majority of the board's decision, not one individual board member.
Very important. I think one purpose that the regional boards serve is the fact that people have access to a decision-making body that has authority over immediate backyard. I recall the discussion of thinking about eliminating the regional boards. So I think, you know, I think the role of the public is huge, and public pressure, which comes in different forms to us, it may come in the form of one person at the podium versus a handful of people, but who represent more organized efforts. They're bringing information to us that sometimes we just don't know about. And because staff is operating at maximum capacity with, you know, the technical expertise that you have, where issues erupt and people suddenly become aware, they don't even know about the regional board. By the time they figure out we're the ones that they should be bringing, problems sometimes are pretty big. So I don't want to – I know I'm one that's inclined to question – staff and ask the board to take time to be responsive to people coming to the podium. And I want to be more careful about raising through that priority kind of setting process and sorting out when does it trigger shifting a priority. But I also don't want to diminish the value of having that opportunity to be responsive to people bringing issues to the podium. Sometimes that means, as Russ, I think, is suggesting, a little bit of follow-up, a little bit of exploration, maybe with some of our sister agencies or in the county, at the county level, figuring out, is this really a problem? And so, you know, I would urge us to continue to value the role of the public coming forward.
Absolutely.
I totally agree with you. I don't think we can ignore at all the public. So even if our priority list is X, we've got to leave a little bit of leftover buffer so that we can respond to the public when they come to us. Otherwise, they're going to start ignoring us and thinking we're irrelevant and not responsive to them. So
show me what state agency has more accessibility than this group here.
Right.
And what Dr. Hunter is referring to a while back was wasn't getting rid of the regional boards, but basically getting rid of the board members and making a department structure like Department of Toxic Substances Control.
Or EPA.
And that would really decimate one of the greatest values of the board, of having this public face and this opportunity. I certainly wasn't talking against that when I use the example of someone coming to the podium. It could be, you know, a board member bringing something in. It's just, and we need to be able to respond, but it doesn't necessarily mean we promise them that we will drop everything and marshal all our resources and we will have an answer to you by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, you know, to use an extreme example. So I think that's the thing that's more realistic, is just trying to figure out, okay, what is the reasonable response? Because we know with all these issues, you can investigate ad nauseum, and you know, turn a small project into a big project. And I think that's where we really need to sort out what's appropriate for the given situation. How does it compare with what we'd be pulling away from in terms of priorities? But certainly everyone needs to have a response.
So do you guys have specific examples?
I have one.
Yeah.
So today we heard a lot about the two databases.
Right.
And the problems with those two databases, right. And we need to resolve those as soon as possible.
Right.
And I think everybody agrees we need to resolve those as soon as possible.
Right.
So one of the things I think that will likely happen is we'll go back to the office, we'll talk about what we're going to do, and the people who are working on that issue are the same people who are bringing the order to the board for September. So they're going to say, okay, Michael, which one do you want me to work on? I'm going to say the order for September. So the fact that they have that work in front of them to do to get ready for that meeting and respond to comments, for example, these responses to comments are coming up, I want them to focus on that, not on resolving this issue. It doesn't mean we ignore it totally, but we're not going to shift over to that problem instead of this other high-priority work that we're working on. Does that make sense?
It does. They seem somewhat related. They're not totally inconsistent. One is just a subset of the other. It's an important part.
It is.
From what we've heard.
It is important. It's important, and we have to decide what we're going to work on tomorrow, the next day, the day after that, to get ready for the September meeting. So it's a decision-making process that we have to go through on a daily basis. And, you know, I'm using that as an example because that's a case where I would say if Angela and her team said, what do you want me to work on based on the feedback from this board meeting, I will say getting ready for the September meeting is priority one, which may result in, Jeff, you asked for a report by the end of the month. Right? The end of the month is, I will say this is even likely. You'll get a report that says nothing has changed. Likely to happen.
But this particular situation seems like it's more of an IT issue than an administrative issue or a staff issue. Sure, the staff's going to have to look at what the changes are to approve them. But some of the things that Mr. Smith brought today, he brought to us a year ago. And so I would think some of those would have been resolved in the last year and not still being continued.
And many of those issues that he brought have been resolved. The changes that have occurred from a year ago, from the situation we were in as far as data goes and the database system and the reporting, the changes between then and now are 180 degrees. And so what you're hearing about now is we still have issues to deal with. There are still errors in the database. And by the way, there will always be errors in the database. So there have been huge changes, huge. We took a system that was outside of our office and outside of our control and brought it into our office, turned it into an e-reporting system, you know, an electronic reporting system. And the amount of work that was involved in that was huge. But we accomplished that by balancing it with all the board meetings that we had that involved the ag item and preparing for those. So as we went along, we said, which one are we going to work on? And we continuously said, preparing for the board meeting and drafting the order and responding to comments and meeting with the ag reps and all the environmental groups and other folks is priority one. The database issues are lower priority. So we spent less time on those, but still worked on it.
It's not a either or deal because we had a message from Angela day or 2 days ago saying that she's already working with the state board and the contractors got approval to go ahead with that work and proceed with these improvements that we were talking about this morning. However, there could be some effect in terms of following up as quickly as possible, adding to that scope with some of the things that came up this morning. You know, some of those areas, then others of us will probably have to help out with that.
And in this case, though, there's a huge overlap. As Kirk pointed out, and I know you guys are aware, it affects Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 assignments.
Right.
Or designations, right? So there is a huge priority to getting this in line, getting the data in order, so that we're appropriately identifying the Tier 1 and versus Tier 3 group. So it is in our interest.
And the billing.
Well, not that, but the monitoring.
I already commented on that one, but I'm saying there is this overlap that we also need to identify Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier right. 3 based on anchorage and operations.
And that will go on. That will continue, that identification and working on this new system after the order is adopted. Mm-hmm. It won't be solved before the order is adopted. Mm-hmm. It'll be ongoing.
Yes, it's not going to be a stagnant situation. it'll change.
Your microphone.
Thank you. To add to your comment, I saw the issue about the software handling of the data really not being a tactical issue, but really a strategic issue for the upcoming success of a tier system. Because I kind of looked at this as, we got to be able to walk before we run. The notice of intent is walking. The tier system implementation and the managing of thousands of data points is running. So I felt that this point was critical because let's face it, this whole order is being very contentious among many parties, and I think as a board we want to see all these efforts, these thousands of hours that staff put in, ultimately turning this into a success story, saying I know. Within not everybody, there was a lot of suspicion, but look, it's working and it's benefiting everyone. And so I think it would be setting ourselves up for failure if knowingly we allowed, this particular issue not to be running smoothly before we go to the next level. So I really didn't see this being contradicting priorities. In fact, the more I reflected during this conversation, I thought, I think there was a good point. And I think sometimes, when you work very closely to the issues, and in our case, we meet once a month or every 2 months, and in my case, being a newcomer, I tend to look at things sometimes at what I call my 30,000 feet altitude. I kind of move back and look way up, and I'm like, wait a minute, the big picture, we need to move a little bit in a different direction. And I think it can be easy when you have all these different task priorities, your measurable goals that you set up, as you showed on these tables, to feel the internal pressure of, wow, I better do this, otherwise Roger is going to say, hey, what's up here? Where is it? But there is this benefit of us, I think, being looking at things. We all have different backgrounds, and I think that's the richness of this board. And that helps, having these different points of view. And I think the intent here is really not to drastically steer you in a different direction, but I think we all have a common goal of trying to bring the success, and that's why there was some eagerness among ourselves here, maybe speaking on behalf of the rest of my colleagues, to say, oh my goodness, let's address this so we don't end up with eggs on our face, to be blunt about it.
I wanted to ask about change the example. I think what's more challenging for us is when a member of the public or you raise an issue that we actually don't think is a priority given our priorities. And we do want to be responsive, and we want to make sure that our inclination is accurate without having to spend a whole lot of time to verify it or check our thinking. And I was trying to think of an example. I can't think of one really readily, but I guess I just wanted to leave this conversation, and maybe Roger's got more to say before we want to end it, but with confidence that you would accept and support us in telling a member of the public who comes to you, we looked into this issue. It isn't high enough priority right now, so staff is not intending to spend any more time on it. The file is closed, or the conversation for now is closed, and if new information comes to light on it that you have later, And otherwise, we're moving back to what we were working on before.
Well, we need feedback from you. As Dr. Wolf said, you're right on the issues. You're going to know how staff's time is being allocated. And if we raise something, you're going to have to remind us the time you're putting in on it, where this fits on the priority list. If the request is diverting staff resources, we need some feedback. Now, it may be we're aware of this. We're going to get to it. Can't do it right now because you should couch it this way. If we do, we're not going to be able to finish this. And we know that this has to get done. We can all see that and agree with you.
All right. That's what we're talking about, is having that kind of a dialogue and getting better at having that, for us to get better at having that kind of a dialogue with you.
Yeah.
That's what we want to do. And I want to follow up on what Lisa and Monica were saying, too, is that and you, Jeff, that responding to the public is really important. It works both ways. We also need to be proactive in letting the public know what our priorities are. And I've had situations where I've had people call me and say, why aren't you working on my case? You guys are ignoring me. And I'll have a conversation about, well, here's where our priorities are and why. And here's where your case fits in with these priorities. And I've actually had people say, oh,
and I
get it now.
I think I would be careful in telling someone your priority is not as high as our priority or doesn't match up. I mean, that's the blunt reality of it, and that is the truth. But I think you got to be very careful.
Yeah, you do have to be diplomatic.
Yeah.
Very diplomatic. Don't be too blunt, Michael.
And in this case, where this actually happened a few times, where I used to work in the cleanup branch, and we had thousands of cases. We could not work on them all. And so we had to develop prioritization criteria, which John and his crew has recently gone through again and has done a really good job of establishing that in the cleanup section. But years ago, we didn't have that. So we went through a less sophisticated process. But even then, we were able to communicate to the public all the cases that we had and how they were all prioritized. And then someone who was concerned about not getting responses from us could see what those priorities were and why. They could see the criteria itself, read the criteria. They had a much better understanding. They had context for what was going on. We have to get better at that. Right, some won't anyway.
No, because they feel that their project is the most important project and you should be working on that. That's because that is the most important thing to them.
That's right.
But when you fit it into the whole large spectrum of all the issues that we do, it may not be.
That happens with the public. It happens everywhere. It happens in our office. We've done the shift in our office towards focusing on nitrate and groundwater because there are people drinking it. This morning they woke up, they were drinking it 10 times the drinking water standard, maybe 15 times they're drinking it. So we're shifting people. And even among a group of people who care a lot about these issues, they say, but wait a minute, I've been working on this for 5 years or 10 years, and now you want me to shift to this. We say, yes, we do. But because they've been working on it and focusing on this other thing, it's sometimes hard to make that shift. It applies to all of us.
Next.
And Fran, if you want to jump in and share your 2 cents with us,
we know that.
Well, if you have anything more constructive, you're faced with the same thing, I'm sure. Your perspective would be invited. But I'll leave it at that. Okay.
Well, speaking of the State Board, Vicki Whitney is the Division of Water Quality Chief. And so they've gone through a priority setting exercise, and it's basically in anticipation of the State Board's next offsite meeting, which would be in a similar vein, setting priorities and that sort of thing, is my understanding. But I don't think you have it scheduled yet.
No.
Right. Kind of shy on board members. So But nevertheless, the staff is doing homework to try to get set up for that. So Vicki sent out their priorities that they developed within the Division of Water Quality and has asked for the regional board's input in terms of how does this square with your priorities and that sort of thing. So we'll be responding to that. She just sent that out. But they're pretty different. And so, you know, it'll be kind of tough to reconcile those. I think one of the challenges is that it's difficult for some people to understand that we don't have to reconcile those. That's one of the reasons for having 9 regions in the first place. It's a big state. And, you know, our region is as big as a couple of other states. So it makes sense that the regions would have different priorities. And so I think that's one of the challenges of the state board. And you probably feel like you're trying to herd cats sometimes. But I think it would be less difficult if all the folks in Sacramento would understand that it makes sense that we would have different priorities and that we should. But it is up to us to articulate those instead of just saying, trust us, you know, trust us, Sacramento, we know what we're doing. So that's part of what we're trying to do here is articulate priorities and the reasons for them. And so hopefully then we can carry that through so it makes sense with the state board as well and can fit in with some kind of a statewide prioritization scheme. But my point is I think a statewide prioritization scheme has to be flexible enough and broad enough to recognize those individual regional priorities. And I sense that perhaps someone from the state board wants to speak now. Use the microphone, please.
Sure. Tom Howard, our new executive director, is working very hard to try to sort through how you can have 9 strong, regionally focused perspectives, but that the state as a whole can take advantage of essentially more collective effort so that we can have more progress on water quality and water rights issues statewide. And so really a challenge that I'd like to have you all think about is right now the reward for the regions, in my opinion, is to be different. Region 4 is very proud because it's different. Region 8 is very proud because it's different. There is almost no reward for being the same, for copying your neighbor, or at least that's my sense. And there should be more reward, if you will, maybe more staff, maybe more money, maybe more something. I don't know what the reward can be, but it seems to me that instead of having to have 9 of a particular program, you could have 2 or 3 different types of regions test a program, and then everybody could not necessarily adopt it through the state, adopt it locally. And I would like to see a little bit more of that, and maybe even getting to where we can start to borrow and have people moving around the regions because they have expertise in nitrates. You all have expertise in nitrates now. You know, there'll be other areas that will need that expertise. Not that your whole staff will wholesale move to some other region, but we need to, as a business, someone was talking about, it's a big business with a lot on our plate, we really need to get creative about how we make the best use. And I think part of it is the reward system. Right now, it doesn't pay you guys to not do it yourselves the way you want to do it. It's just, and I think that's a mistake. And it's not your fault. It's as a system, as a whole system, I just think we need to do a better job of thinking through how we can operate more efficiently. I guess I'll stop there. So that's it is a challenge. I mean, it's just huge, and we'll probably be working on it forever. But it is something that we are thinking about a lot at the state board level, and because we're looking at the budgets and we're looking at the future and we're looking at staffing and we're looking at the challenges and we're looking at being held accountable for doing our job a whole lot more than we've been held accountable in the past, and so it's really an emergency, if you will, that we get smarter about this stuff.
If I could just add to your comment, the idea of maximizing, becoming more efficient, in terms of the immediate priorities that the regions present, you know, we have the opportunity here to develop and advance in the way we manage and deal with nitrates. And as you point out, it's to our advantage to make that distinction and show that strength and that we then offer to other regions. And so in that bigger strategy, when we look at the system, that get formalized into the state water board strategy, that each of its regions has a chance to look at in the ground or on the ground situations that are of immediate urgency that then offer model responses. That we utilize that diversity, because we all recognize diversity has tremendous richness, as I think the words you used. And maybe that should be formalized, and maybe that's something you can take back so that they appreciate the tools that they have growing, because the knowledge that comes from that is directly interacting with the stakeholder, the land use, the operation, the business factors and economic impacts of changing practices and so forth. So there's a lot of value in using that kind of laboratory, if you will, understanding of how this solution can move forward and in context of stakeholder concerns.
Sort of to add to that, you're suggesting cross-pollination between the regions. What is the mechanism for board members to be aware of the successes of other regions and that might apply to what we're trying to do here?
And I know it, that the meeting that we have, but we could work on that. I mean, I think there should be better. I don't have an answer for you because really it's pretty weak. We do have chairs calls every month, once a month, where we share information, but it's not, the purpose isn't for cross-pollination. So, I mean, we should think about that, and that might be a good topic for WQCC. Yeah.
One thought, you something that you presented today that really intrigued me, and I thought, I'm going to chase that one down, and that is that spreadsheet that you receive every third Tuesday. Can all of the water board members be added to the distribution list? That's not a big deal. And if we receive that and could look at that, again, there's another way. It's already happening. We could see at least that 30,000 look view at what's changing where, what's on pace, and what is lagging, and where priorities are being shifted. That would be really great. My ears perked up when you brought that one up.
I thought of that as well when Dave was asking his question. I think that's going to be more focused on state board activities as opposed to the success stories in other regions and that sort of thing. So we probably have to think about other ways to augment that. But I think there's also the problem of information overload and just, you know, what are the strategic things to send out to you and ask you to read and focus on.
It's true, but I love spreadsheets. And, you know, spreadsheet takes a few minutes to really glance at it and see where you're interested in. Reading a quarterly report, you know, takes a lot more dedication. But spreadsheets, I think, are great.
Right. But there's only so much of a story you can tell. John Robertson will disagree with me, but there's only so much of a story you can tell with a spreadsheet.
He's right behind you, too.
I know. As far as, you know, why was a certain project successful? Why was it different? That really takes a story, you know.
Sure, but I'm, you know, if it strikes me, I might ask more questions or look into it more. But that's what I'm saying. The 30,000-foot view still, though, I think it's really helpful to have the big picture.
Right.
Another idea, I'm not sure how this would play out, and we don't want to make our staff reports much longer necessarily or our presentations, but maybe we could be thinking more about when we are adopting some aspect of a project direction or regulatory option from our knowledge of another region's use of it, that we could actually inform you of that when we're presenting, even if it's a decision item, and that's just background, but just to raise your awareness of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Along the same lines, this conversation reminds me of the conversation that assistant executive officers are having right now, and that's to ask ourselves why we meet. You know, we have regular meetings, and my attendance has been pretty spotty at those because I haven't found a lot of value in them. And one of the reasons is just what you brought up, Mr. Hodgin, is that I think we should be learning from each other what we've done that hasn't worked or what we've done that has worked and apply that. And they're more of administrative-type meetings, and so they've been kind of frustrating for me. But we're now revisiting that. Why? What is our role? And why are we meeting, and how can we get the most benefit out of working together along the same lines to learn from each other?
We're trying to do that with the at the executive officers, executive director level with the so-called MCC, Management Coordinating Committee meetings, which are once a month. And we've been pushing for saving the or using email for the purely status reports, you know, kind of administrative status reports. Let's use that valuable meeting time for the meaty stuff. But it's easy to fall back on, well, here's the latest status report on our contracting, you know, and it's not really focusing on what we should be discussing when we have that opportunity. So we've been, both of us have been pushing for that with our respective groups. And getting some traction.
That points out that somebody really needs to be kind of monitoring what information is worth distributing to everybody.
Right.
I think the board members feel like they have stacks and stacks of material to go through already.
Well, that's why I was mentioning information overload.
Yep.
You have to be strategic about it. So, anyway.
So that does suggest some sort of a gatekeeper that would decide what's worthy
right.
of general distribution.
Right. So, you know, another example, it's a spreadsheet sort of a thing, but Harvey mentioned in the enforcement report at the back, this relatively new thing, is to show you what all the regions are doing, us included, as far as administrative civil liabilities, mandatory minimum penalties. And so you look at that and you can see, wow, here's a big one for a dairy, and Region 4 is catching up on their MMPs and that sort of thing. But it doesn't really tell you anything about individual cases, what was unique, what was valuable that could transfer that might help us with compliance or enforcement actions. So, I mean, that's an example of a spreadsheet that it's there, but how much value is it really?
Well, but I would say, you know, if it might be the tip of an iceberg, but still, I mean, there are some ways of seeing commonalities
mm-hmm.
and a follow-up call that, you know, a section chief might decide, you know, worthy of an intern making a call to say, what's the story here? So, I, you know, again, I love spreadsheets. I love to see things boiled down to kind of real brief ideas and then or statements or descriptions. And then, you know, then we leave it up to interpretation how we use our expertise and our knowledge to mine that information. But these are opportunities. It's again, it's a lot better than asking us to go and look at their minutes
sure.
to
right.
see what they're dealing with. You know,
right.
that's I'm not going to do that.
Right.
So
oh,
I appreciate
I'm not saying it doesn't have. I'm not saying it doesn't have value.
Yeah.
But there's a definitely a limitation there. terms of understanding what's behind it. So Fran mentioned Executive Director Tom Howard's efforts, and one of the things that Tom sent out just recently to all the regions was basically an invitation to change our priorities. And it had to do, it has to do with this issue of aquatic habitat right here. So, you know, there are different aspects to what makes healthy aquatic habitat. One of them is actually the water quality. Is it toxic? The riparian structure, and by the way, this looks like it's a pretty badly beaten down creek. It doesn't have much in the way of riparian.
No, we don't see it.
We don't see it. We're not seeing it.
Oh. What are you doing to me here?
Thought it was something interesting.
I'm back to this very expensive All graphic. Right. So there's not a lot of riparian health here in this creek. But anyway, another aspect of habitat is shade, you know, hiding place for the fish, all that kind of a thing. But a third sort of triangle for healthy habitat is there actually enough water for the fish in the first place or for the other critters? And that's what Tom was getting at in terms of an invitation to us. And it was basically this teamwork idea of would the regions be interested in basically doing what has been traditionally water rights work that has been solely with the staff of the state board. You know, they have water quality division, they have water rights division. So what he was talking about was enlisting regional board staff to work on some high priority critical creeks, rivers in our region on these low flow conditions and low flow allocations and that sort of a thing. And so we considered that, and I'll get down to our priorities here. It's really a subset of this idea of aquatic habitat. And I figured the best person in our office to talk to about that and get an opinion was Karen Worster, and asked her to consider that. And one of the rivers that Tom actually mentioned as being high priority in their list within our region is the Big Sur River because of some water rights issues. And you know, Karen felt, boy, our plate is pretty full with all the toxicity problems that we have. The Big Sur River is actually in really good shape compared to other rivers. It won't be in such good shape if there are a lot of additional diversions down the road. That's true. But anyway, we had a discussion about those priorities and really landed on the fact that we shouldn't shift priorities as far as that issue goes. But I thought since we're talking about priorities here in the interest of full disclosure, I should bring it up with you and let you know that that was something that Tom Howard threw out, not to just us, but all the regions. I talked to Tom specifically about it, and I talked to him about comparing it to seawater intrusion here. And is that me? We start later?
Yes.
In that, if you think of seawater intrusion, it's affecting groundwater, not surface water, but it's basically a low-flow condition in that there's not enough recharge, there's too much withdrawal, and we know we have severe existing water quality problems, basically ruined groundwater in the intruded areas that eliminate beneficial use wherever there's intrusion. So I was talking to him about how it seems to me that that's more important. And he ended up agreeing that in our instance that's true. And we talked about ways to proceed along those lines. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out to you, that it was an additional priority discussion that we've had with the State Board Executive Director. Going back to my diagram here. Michael mentioned performance measures briefly, and that's something that we're coordinating with the State Board on as well, the statewide performance measures that Michael mentioned. Second section of our report that we've given you here, we have a section that talks about what we're doing within our three different technical sections of our staff. It's kind of broken out by those sections. What our priorities are, So that's a further resolution of priorities within what they do. And in some cases, it kind of takes these goals that I had up here and applies some of that same format to the individual work tasks that they have and performance measures that they've developed for their individual programs, whether it's 401 certifications or stormwater runoff or whatever, landfills. So we've provided that report for you, and that was in part because, as Michael said, Dave Hodgen asked initially, how do we know you're doing what you say you're going to do or are doing? And also Jean-Pierre, you'd asked recently, as a new board member, you'd asked for a more complete summary of what the heck we do. So that's part of the reason for providing this part of the report. So there's...
I said it more diplomatically, but that's all right.
Of course. So we have the pages aren't numbered here. They should have been numbered, but I think we have, 26 pages or something of fairly detailed information that if you hadn't had a chance to read it yet, I recommend that you do try to make your way through it because it will give you a more complete picture of a lot of the things that happen, as Fran was talking about, a lot of things that happen that don't come up to the board level. You don't see all these things by a long shot. So, and so it is tough. You know, you're talking about only meeting once a month or maybe once every 2 months. It is tough from that 30,000 foot viewpoint to really have an understanding of what the heck it is you're directing here. So I'm certainly, I think this will provide a lot more information for you in terms of what all goes into these different programs, what our priorities are, how we're prioritizing and dealing, trying to break down these priorities even further. One of the programs that's mentioned in here is basin planning. And so I wanted to go back to this diagram again to point out that we talked about this last year, that we have three priority basin plan amendments that we're trying to make progress on, although it's kind of difficult because they end up being kind of extracurricular activities for the staff that are working on them. But one has to do with aquatic habitat, a basin plan amendment that would provide a region-wide policy for those factors that I was talking about for aquatic habitat. One is for recharge, protection of recharge areas for groundwater, which has to do with land management. And then an overall watershed protection basin plan amendment to provide an overall framework. And for those of you who were at the offsite meeting last year, you may remember that Dominic Rock talked somewhat extensively about that. So those are still in the works, and they're discussed in the report here, as well as, just different examples. Like I mentioned, landfills and how Michael was saying how with what we have for performance measures now on a statewide level are more sort of administrative. And so with landfills, it would be how many orders have you updated? How many landfill orders have you updated? Whereas Taya and her squad have taken that to a point where it makes more sense on what's the biggest bang for the buck with water quality for landfills. So it might be what which ones have liners installed.
For landfills, what we did is developed as a group, developed different criteria, so threat to water quality, if they're leaking, if they have a liner system in place, if they have corrective action in place because there is a plume, if the concentrations are above drinking water standards, downgrading of the landfill. So all of these criteria we developed as a team, and we scored each one of our landfills where they were at, and that allowed us to rank all of our sites, and we developed high, medium, and low priority, and then very low priority because, for example, they were not leaking, they had a cover on top, and they were managed very well. Because I only have 2.3 people that can handle all the landfills in our region, this gives us the opportunity. 90% of our time is spent on the high and medium sites, and all the low priority sites are actually assigned to me. So if there's questions that come in I decide, well, what high priority thing we're not going to work on to address the low priority thing. And it makes sense because we're working on the highest priority thing. But on the other end of things that you don't think about is how it helps staff feel confident that they're working on the high priority thing. And when they get the calls, that they can say, I'm sorry, I can't address that until next month. I'm working on this right now. So we've done that with site cleanup too, and it really helps keep it organized and focused and efficient.
It actually seemed like kind of a novel approach that Taya assigned all the low priority sites to herself. But it kind of makes sense then that she has the bigger picture and can figure out then if something percolates up, well, how does it fit in terms of priorities, whereas an individual staff would not have that bigger picture to be able to do that. So anyway, I commend that to you for your perusal. And I'll move on to the last section of the report. Unless, did you want to add any more to that, Michael?
Can I ask something that may be helping a little bit with the rest of the conversation? Can we go back to the very expensive graph that you have on the...
the real expensive one?
The very expensive one, yeah, this one.
Okay.
All right. As a regional water quality control board, you know, I see this as being a vertical integration where we have habitat, groundwater, managed land, and then go to the priority one.
Mm-hmm.
Go to that slide.
I'm the one who's operating this here.
Okay, great. And this is basically, as I see it, the vertical integration of what
this is prioritized.
Yeah.
Right.
But in a sense, we could call it the vertical integration of a water quality control board where we have human health, aquatic habitat, mm-hmm. et cetera. Each of these have stakeholders. And my question, really part of my learning process here, is do we have sometimes stakeholder meetings specific to these areas that are invited, maybe on a quarterly? I'm not trying to have more meetings, but I think it's very important, you know, when you work on issues, sometimes, you know, you got to stay close to, you know, to the stakeholders and get input from the industry. So, for example, if I took the aquatic habitat, you know, if you do have some time stakeholders meeting where you invite fish and game, fisheries, wildlife, and have a discussion on their critical issues, so that helps, you know, staff when we look at our priorities to be able to be totally dialed in and being, you know, assuring that we're current with the issues, because what inadvertently could be viewed as a priority issue for the Regional Water Quality Control Board may not necessarily be the priority of, let's say, fish and game, you know, hypothetically.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any kind of mechanism in place right now to have these closer interface in a more formalized way?
Well, I mentioned when I was talking about Tom Howard's suggestion and trying to figure out how does that fit in with overall priorities or as a sub-priority of aquatic habitat. And so I went to Karen Worcester, who manages our monitoring program. But not only does she manage the monitoring program, but she's an ex-biologist with Fish and Game. And she has, I think, on our staff probably the most contact with Fish and Game, Moss Landing Marine Lab, and all the folks that work in this aspect of what we do. And so I think she is very networked. She's the one that provided the report that we had on the coastal lagoons, for example, which is brand new report, the latest data. So I mean, there's certainly room for improvement, and I think in her case, it's kind of ad hoc, but she is very networked as far as aquatic habitat issues go and toxicity issues and that sort of thing. And then, of course, aquatic habitat also, because of the riparian issue, overlaps with things like our stormwater program, where municipalities can infringe on creeks. And so that our stormwater staff is working with municipalities on a regular basis, not only on the aquatic habitat protection area, but also the hydrologic processes area. You might recall we have what we call the joint effort underway, which virtually all of our municipalities have signed on to for coming up with hydro modification criteria, control criteria, and we have that network that's well underway and is a pretty involved process. So sure, there's always room for improvement, but and seawater intrusion, yesterday Harvey Packard and I were meeting with the city of Watsonville on that topic. So we're trying, but again, there's that balancing act of how much time do you spend on that networking, and what does that take away from?
Yeah, because the reason I mentioned that too is that I think the networking, I'm not suggesting just having a big happy family and say, gee, it was great seeing you, but there is a lot of, as you know, I mean, we live in a information age, and there is a lot of information out there, I think sometime having group of, I'll call experts or people specializing in certain areas, and I'll call them generically stakeholders, they can say, oh, but, by the way, you can talk to so-and-so. They have this report, right. Or did you know about this? Just like today.
Right, informally. With the guy from the fairgrounds.
Yeah, exactly. Right. He would not have picked up on that if it hadn't been for that eyeball-to-eyeball, so to speak, interface.
Right.
So I was just curious to see if there was some mechanism, even if it was, once every 6 months and it's the turn of a different segment of our priorities, having, stakeholder meetings, and that would often help also the perception versus reality that the Regional Water Board is not working on its own little island, that they're very, very much in tune with what's going on because, they're bringing all the stakeholders together.
I wanted to add one other thing. Another routine process, not very frequent, however, is our basin plan triennial review. And it's every 3 years we reevaluate what our standards are and what the issues that should be amended into our basin plan are. And that's coming up again in a year from now. And the last one we did was the first time that we actually did float out the priorities as we had them expressed at that time, which is not exactly as you see them here now, building on our three goals, the same goals, and the basin plan amendments that are on our staff's to-do list right now were part of the discussion and the prioritization that happened through that process. So we can continue to use that and perfect that, as well as maybe expand that to at least be announcing and sharing with the public and the stakeholders that want to engage at this level a little bit more on our priorities and to the extent to which those should specifically inform any changes to our standards, the implementation strategies associated with our standards that we express in the basin plan.
Yeah, if I could add to that, and I'm not, I realize that many good ideas have been discussed over the years since I've been on the board in these meetings, and they all can't go forward. But one idea that I had mentioned probably 2 or 3 years ago was this idea of holding a state of the region annual meeting where we could put out, the best and most comprehensive view of what we've learned and what we're doing. But there could be a different way of accomplishing that within the structure that we already have, and that is periodically staff does provide an update on a huge kind of component of our program. And I'm guessing that our priorities are driving that. And so possibly we could institute within a regular board meeting when we have those kind of big picture updates that we call that now a series of state of the region reports. And that this kind of triggers some public awareness that, over a period of the year, we will be updating ourselves on, in a very general and kind of big picture way what we're doing on these issues, and that we start to, you know, link them so that we have this ecology of what we do as scientists, what we do as policy and regulators, and that, you know, use the website, State of the Region, next presentation on seawater intrusion planned for September. So people who are activists and who are advocates of different issues can start to track on the series that are going to be coming up. And it doesn't add any work other than, you know, kind of identifying these opportunities and changing the name. I would love to see that.
Good thought.
You know, one thing I believe we've been criticized for over the years has been maybe not networking enough. Part of that criticism comes from a past board member, Tom O'Malley, who I think felt that, you know, we were kind of heavy-handed and it was kind of a top-down type of communication with permit holders in the region, that we just kind of, you know, dictate or mandate things. And I think he's overstated, you know, what he perceives as a problem, but I think he has correctly identified a situation of where we could be doing better at networking and making our job easier to do in the end and be getting more information as we're going down a process of deciding how to implement things. Part of our effort in trying to address that was, you know, our board outreach that we created. Not been received by our stakeholders, you know, that readily, but it's in trying to get them informed as to what we're doing and kind of developing more feedback loops with them. I think that's just a different way of characterizing what Dr. Wolf is talking about, like periodic stakeholder groups devoted to these priority topics where there's kind of an open exchange of information.
Right.
Now, we're good at doing what we do, which is regulating. I think we do that very good. But I think at times we miss the other portions of what we could be doing, and it would enhance and improve the way we regulate.
Speaking of that board outreach deal, which, as you say, kind of sputtered, but we did send another follow-up letter regarding the groundwater problems in San Benito County and sent that to the Board of Supervisors, and I sent a copy to all of you, so we may be getting another invitation to address the Board of Supervisors up there. But that's an idea to take into account in terms of capitalizing on basically what we're already doing, but almost advertising it more.
Yeah, and by renaming it, signaling maybe a different type or a different part of our process that maybe looks like really routine bureaucratic on the agenda when people look at it. It's like,
right.
Oh, that's not important. It's an update. But if we really highlight it as this is the time, if you're a stakeholder, you're interested in seawater intrusion, you know, this is when we're holding this discussion. And that could be a way to attract stakeholders to that discussion.
Good. Go on to the last part of this. Third section in your item 18. I did something that is a little different, I guess. I asked all the staff to take 5 or 10 minutes. Mom took 11 or 12 minutes, as it turns out, but to jot down something that they're proud of that they accomplished in their jobs at our office. And that was basically the assignment. And so I've I've compiled those, and they're as you might expect, is quite a broad range of various things, from some big things to some little things. Like Sorrel Marks said that she even, I think in what's included in the write-up here, is that this may sound kind of silly, but she felt that something that she participated in an enforcement case ended up with a supplemental environmental project was basically just what do they call them, mutt mitts. I think it was in the Morro Bay.
Yeah, that is a
estuary, and she said that she thought that was probably the biggest bang for the buck deal that she's done. And so, I mean, it sounds like a little thing, but and it goes all the way up to big things with seawater and intrusion solutions and that sort of thing. But it's a compilation that's we haven't done before, and might help those board members who have asked, gee, what have we accomplished as a regional board? It's not comprehensive or anything. They're just snippets. But these were the things that individual staff decided to come up with. And I did ask for those who might have some pictures to or photographs to provide those if they could. So I have a few of those here. And see, this was Dean. Was this yours? Dean here? Yeah, so you can talk about it if you want to, Dean, if you want to get to the podium, or maybe you're presented out. But this is the Halone Road landfill, Monterey County, right? And so this is taken from one of the landfill cells that's covered with vegetation, I presume. And then what they did here was use kind of a unique phytoremediation system with it's willows, isn't it, or is it eucalyptus? Eucalyptus. So this is kind of the before picture where they planted eucalyptus with the idea of going down with their roots and taking care of contaminants that are migrating underneath the landfill. And this is the after picture with the trees that are established. And apparently it's been pretty successful in terms of stripping out contaminants.
Normally, with landfill covers these days, they put in plastic to cover the landfill, and in this case, the authority approached us and wanted to use an alternative earthen cover. Typically, they're like 3 feet of soil, with the idea is they minimize infiltration into the waste. You can use them in semi-arid areas, but we work with them, and it takes a little more engineering versus the plastic cover to verify that the soils will indeed work and are installed properly. But so in combining that, there's this corrective action for, low concentrations of VOCs coming out of the bottom of the landfill. And instead of an active system, this is in the bedrock of the Monterey Formation, the groundwater flows very slowly. And those systems were on the table. We proposed, or they proposed, this phytoremediation, and we work with them. And the concentrations of VOCs, were going up above drinking water standards, and I scanned the report a few months back, and they had flattened and are going down. So last I looked at it, it looks like the combined approach is successful. And it's a green approach. You don't have to actively pump, treat, deal with the water. So
thanks,
that's
Dean.
In a nutshell. Thanks.
What a collection of staff comments in here.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a neat compilation myself. And part of the reason I thought it would be worthwhile doing, for one thing, it wasn't a huge time investment. Like I said, take 5 or 10 minutes. But I also thought that by people stopping, our staff stopping and thinking about that, and then being able to see what other people put together might actually provide some additional job satisfaction, motivation, and that sort of thing. And actually what I found was when I read it, I got pretty excited about it. So provided job satisfaction for me in terms of what you know, our total organization is doing. This one was from Donette, and it's kind of a little one, but it was a construction, Donette Dunaway. This was a construction site that had gone kind of crazy and had a lot of runoff that was uncontrolled. This is runoff from the below the site here. And she kind of followed what was happening and found out that this, what used to be a nice, apparently used to be a nice wetland, was filling up with sediment and a lot of construction debris, which was a big indicator that, that the problem was actually coming from this construction site. So she went after them, so to speak, and they mucked out the what they had discharged in there, and now it's a recovered wetland. She was hoping to have, this is not an after picture here, it looks much better now, and she hoped to have a picture of that, but wasn't able to get that for me. But anyway, she's pretty proud of the fact that here's this little corner of the world that is a restored wetland thanks to her efforts. This is Chumash Creek in the Morro Bay watershed. There's some dogies on the left that had unrestricted access to the creek. So that's the before picture on the left over here. And that's kind of like my cross-section with no vegetation. And here are after pictures once they put in some controls on the cattle. And so here's vegetation that has taken root in Chumash Creek. This was Howard Kolb that worked on this one. This is the Santa Maria watershed. This is Peter Merton's example. And there was a ammonia discharge that was kind of hard to figure out where the heck it was coming from. And he actually worked with other staff, Mary Adams of our monitoring program, and I forget who else without looking at the report. But anyway, they figured out where it was coming from and got it to stop, and it was right about here, if you can see my cursor, where they took the control action and got the discharger to stop their washout of ammonia-laden water. And you can see the data points have really flattened out. And ammonia is toxic. This was Jill North's example of working on, she had a few examples she mentioned in here, but, and so I don't know exactly which one this is, but anyway, some before and after pictures of some, this used to be a wetland area that was flattened and dredged out, and through her actions, the wetlands have been reestablished. You can see it's in an agricultural area. And this is Dairy Creek in Morro Bay. Can't remember who submitted this one. But it's similar to Howard's. Maybe it was Howard. And shows a denuded creek here. You can see the same tree for reference with additional vegetation in here. And Dairy Creek again, before and after. And then this was... San Luisito, I didn't get the label on here, but this creek are the same. And you can see, the same tree for reference here, the distinctive branch, the same location. But this was again, pretty much a grazing problem with cattle. And now this is the after picture with riparian vegetation that's in much better shape.
And fencing.
Pardon me?
And fencing. Yes. I noticed that in the previous set, too.
Right, here's fencing here. In some cases, it's not total exclusion of cattle. Some people say, well, sure, if you get rid of cattle, then we wouldn't have these problems. But these are not necessarily all total exclusion. In some cases, ranchers exercise, it was a new term to me, but anyway, they call it flash grazing, where they are allowed to go in and... do some vegetation control in the creek, but not to the point where the creek looks like it looks on the left there. So much more controlled but not necessarily total exclusion. Some of them, they do have fencing, and they're able to establish another water source on the hill so that the cattle don't need to get down to the creek for water. So that's a big factor. So there's a combination of total exclusion versus partial exclusion or part-time exclusion. And that's the same creek again, before and after. And this is part of what we're working for. So anyway, I'm pretty proud myself of everything that the staff has been able to do. And I hope that this has kind of been helpful for you to get a kind of a broader understanding of a lot of the things that we do and are able to accomplish that don't necessarily end up in front of you as a board agenda item. And we do have a card.
Okay.
Whoa.
Darlene Din.
Okay, I'm faithful. I sit here. I'm your public. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to this. I want to speak to where we were about probably an hour ago.
Okay.
And a couple important points, because I'm probably one of those in the public that vacillates back and forth from eliminating the board.
What?
Well, I'll confess. And efficiency in dollars and, you know, good governance to, if I don't have you, then I have to drive to Sacramento. So I'm honestly putting it out as an honest factor of representational government and how the public needs to think about unintended consequences of immediate response. Look at, and, you know, from my point of view, I consider term limits a failure. Now, I'm not sure what others do. I think it had an idea. It's allowed some young people to get into public office that maybe wouldn't have. But for governance point of view and managing and for the public, and that's why I, Chair, I honestly don't want to get rid of you. But, you know, I mean, when you sit and you try to think, how do you, as a public person and a stakeholder, respond to the enormity of the state budget, the issues that need to be addressed, and how do you look at the priorities? And I guess here's where I look at. I look at us as a representational government, and our elected officials are the closest that we have in local or state to be able to respond and to work on our behalves. You're appointed, which makes you an oddity to me, and the only piece of this board that I think is a challenge is access. And because in my work, I can go to a public elected official and sit down and speak to them. And I can't go and speak to you because I'm an agricultural representative. So that's complicated. And I just want to put that out there as one of the factors of this whole system that I believe. And it isn't just myself. I'm assuming that the other stakeholder groups address those same issues, and that I think access to decision makers are an important part of representational government. So the only way that we really have it is at this body. And the second thing is, in all candor, priorities and responsibilities, since you're my representative, because you're the decision makers in this case, and whether it's a state board, I believe you need to set those priorities. And it's not disrespectful to staff. Staff are not appointed. They aren't responsible. They're a staff party, and they have to give you your best advice. But what does concern me and is that from a public point of view, whatever the priorities are from this regional board, and I really like the idea of looking at others, and partly because of my work, I've been following the Central Valley waiver, and there is a coalition that's now improving. They're actually having on-the-ground water quality improvement. And I believe within areas that have higher nitrate crops and different, and I think those should be analyzed. And that's part of looking at coalition. But I don't want to get off topic because I don't want to get in trouble. But I just want to end up with the thought is we need you to set the priorities. And I appreciate staff giving you the response, but that's your job for when I am my public and other stakeholder groups, because you're going to hear from me and my other side. you have to ultimately make those priorities and those decisions, and you have to have the adjustment time in that. Please keep that, because otherwise, then you really aren't a necessity. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else, Mr. Briggs, for our off-site, on-site meeting?
Unless you have feedback for us.
Any other board comments, questions, suggestions? Okay. Thank you very much. I think it was a helpful discussion to have, and we certainly don't need to wait for this kind of a meeting to have this kind of discourse on priorities. You know, we could do that at any time it's necessary.
We'll definitely be doing that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we will reconvene in September, correct?
Yes.
All righty.
I won't be sitting here. Thank you for the opportunity today.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.